Welcome to New World Notes, a series that explores the gap between the America we want and the America they're trying to make us settle for, and how we the people can reestablish our commonwealth and reclaim our democracy. Edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. With the Bush administration heading for its last roundup, hopes of media reform spring eternal in the human breast. And let's not bring up Janet Jackson this week. The show will bring up, though, and play great talks by critics Howard Zinn and Eric Kleinenberg on how we the people can clean up that toxic waste dump, the corporate-controlled media. Tempus fugit, pardon my Latin, so off we go. In Minneapolis last month, hundreds of media reform activists met to discuss problems and debate solutions. Speakers included Dan Rather and Bill Moyers. Also, the two FCC commissioners who should not be hanged, drawn, and quartered, Edelstein and Copps. This show, too, is on media reform. True to the spirit of the whole enterprise, it pays no attention whatever to the Minneapolis conference and blazes its own shining path through the media jungle. Some might claim that the show gets hopelessly lost, tangled in the underbrush, trapped in the quicksand, and at last rescued by Roy Zimmerman with the program's second discussion of European media critic Hermann Göring. Some might claim this. I deny it all. Probably most people would agree that the corporate media have failed to serve anyone but their owners. This is most obvious in their programming of news and analysis, especially concerning the Bush administration's blatant war crimes, crimes of occupation, and crimes against humanity. Hey, whatever happened to three strikes and you're out? Apparently that rule applies only to petty criminals. But I think this critique of the media is too lenient. With a very few honorable exceptions, the corporate-controlled media have not just failed to do their duty to the public, they have actively collaborated in Bush's crimes, not to mention in Ehud Olmert's crimes. The media are accomplices. The dim witness news on TV and the New York Times are not just watchmen sleeping on duty. They're made men, full members of the criminal gang. Other media critics are more hopeful than I about the people reforming the media, recapturing our democracy, and making the State Department's role model someone other than Al Capone. My own sympathies are with Utah Phillips. Last week he described how he carried his TV set out to his backyard, gave it a blindfold, taped a last cigarette to it, then ventilated it with a round or two of double-aught buckshot from his old Stevens shotgun. Kids, check local ordinances before trying this at home. But, as I said, others are more optimistic than Utah, and we'll hear from two of them. First is the distinguished scholar and professor of American history, Howard Zinn. In this small part of a long lecture from 2006, Zinn reminds us that all governments lie, and that our news media lately have simply echoed the lies. But by learning some real American history, the people can to some extent immunize themselves against belief in the lies, even when the media have failed to seek the truth. Here's Howard Zinn.
Do you get the feeling sometime that you're living in an occupied country? Very often it's a feeling I get when I wake up in the morning and I think, I'm living in an occupied country. A small group of aliens have taken over the country and trying to do with it what they will, you know, and really are. I mean, they are alien to me. I mean, those people who are coming across the border from Mexico, they are not alien to me, you see. Muslims who come to this country to live, they are not alien to me, you see. And you've seen those signs saying, no human being is alien. I think that's true, except for the people in Washington. You see, they've taken over the country, they've taken over the policy, they've driven us into two disastrous wars, disastrous for our country and even more disastrous for the people in the Middle East. They have sucked up the wealth of this country and given it to the rich and given it to the multinationals, given it to Halliburton, given it to the makers of weapons. They're ruining the environment, and they're holding on to 10,000 nuclear weapons while they want us to worry about the fact that Iran may, in 10 years, get one nuclear weapon. How mad can you be? The question is, how has this been allowed to happen? How have they gotten away with it? They're not following the will of the people. They manufactured a will of the people for a very short time, right after the war started, as governments are able to do right after the beginning of an armed conflict. You know, they're able to create an atmosphere of war hysteria. And so for a short time, they captivated the minds of the American people. That's not true anymore. The American people have begun to understand what is going on and have turned against the policies in Washington. But, of course, they are still there. You know, they are still in power. The question is, you know, how do they get away with that? So in trying to answer this question, I looked a little at the history of Nazi Germany. No, it's not that we are Nazi Germany, but you can learn lessons from everybody. In this case, I was interested in the ideas of Hermann Göring, who, you may know, was second in command to Hitler, head of the Luftwaffe. And at the end of World War II, when the Nazi leaders were put on trial in Nuremberg, Hermann Göring was in prison along with other of the leaders of the Nazi regime. And he was visited in prison by a psychologist who was given the job of interviewing the defendants at Nuremberg. And he asked Göring, how come the Nazis were able to get the German people to go along with such absurd and ruinous policies of war and aggression? And Göring said, why, of course, the people don't want war. Why would some poor slob on a farm want to risk his life in a war? But after all, it is the leaders of the country who determine the policy. The people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. All you have to do is tell them they're being attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism. It works the same way in any country. I was interested in that last line. It works the same way in any country. I mean, these are the Nazis. That's the fascist regime. We are a democracy, but it works the same way in any country. Whatever you call yourself, whether you call yourself a totalitarian state or you call yourself a democracy, it works the same way. And that is the leaders of the country are able to cajole or coerce and entice the people into war by scaring them, telling them they're in danger, and threatening them and coercing them that if they don't go along, they will be considered unpatriotic. And this is what really happened in this country right after 9/11. And this is what happened right after Bush raised the specter of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and got for a while the American people to go along with this. But the question is, how did they get away with it? What about the press? What about the media? Isn't it the job of the press? Isn't it the job of the media? Isn't it the job of journalism to expose what governments do? Don't journalists learn from I.F. Stone, who said, just remember two words, he said to young people who were studying journalism. He said, just remember two words, governments lie. Well, but the media have not picked up on that. The media have gone along. They embraced the idea of weapons of mass destruction. You remember when Colin Powell appeared before the United Nations just before the onset of the Iraq War and laid out to the UN this litany of weaponry that Iraq possessed, according to him, and gave great details and how many canisters of this and how many tons of this and so on and so forth. And the next day, the press was just aglow with praise. They didn't do their job of questioning. They didn't do their job of asking, what is your evidence? Where did you get this intelligence? Who did you talk to? What are your sources? Isn't this what you learn as a freshman in college? Where are your footnotes? No, they were just, the Washington Post said, it is hard to imagine how anyone could doubt that Iraq possesses weapons of mass destruction. And the New York Times, was just beside themselves with admiration for Colin Powell. Of course, it all turned out to be untrue, all turned out to be lies, but the press did not do its job. And as a result, the American people, watching television, reading the newspapers, had no alternative source of information, no alternative opinion, no alternative critical analysis of what was going on. And the question is, why still did the people believe what they read in the press? Why did they believe what they saw on television? And I would argue that it has something to do with the loss of history. It has something to do with what Studs Terkel called national amnesia. Either the forgetting of history or the learning of bad history. The learning of the kind of history that you do get. Columbus was a hero, and Teddy Roosevelt is a hero, and Andrew Jackson is a hero, and all these guys who are presidents and generals and industrialists and so on, they are the people who made America great. And America has always done good things in the world. And we have had our little problems, of course. Lots of slavery, for instance, but we overcome them, not that kind of history. If the American people really knew history, if they learned history, if the educational institutions did their job, if the press did its job in giving people historical perspective, then people would understand. When the president gets up before the microphone and says, we must go to war for this or for that, for liberty or for democracy or because we're in danger and so on, if people had some history behind them, they would know how many times presidents have announced to the nation, we must go to war for this reason or that reason. They would know that President Polk said, we must go to war against Mexico because, there was an incident that took place on the border there and we our honor demands that we go to war. They would know, if they knew some history, how President McKinley took the nation into war against Spain and Cuba, saying, we're going in to liberate the Cubans from Spanish control. And in fact, there was a little bit of truth to that. We did go in. We fought against Spain. We got Spain out of Cuba. We liberated them from Spain, but not from ourselves. And so Spain was out and United Fruit was in. And then the American banks and the American corporations were in. And if people knew their history, they would know, that President McKinley said, as an American army was already in the Philippines and the American Navy was already in the Philippines, and Theodore Roosevelt, one of our great presidential heroes, was lusting for war, then people would know that McKinley, who did not know where the Philippines were. But very often our presidents need to be briefed and told where something is. George Bush, this is where Iraq is. They need it. They would know if they knew the history that President McKinley said, we're going into the Philippines to civilize and Christianize the Filipinos. And if they knew their history, if the history books spent some time on the war in the Philippines in the early part of the 20th century, instead of, as history books do, they spent a lot of time on the Spanish-American War, which just lasted 3 months. They spent virtually no time on the war in the Philippines, a bloody war which lasted, 7 years, and which involved massacres and the extermination of populations. That history doesn't appear. So, we civilized and Christianized the Filipinos and established our control. They would know if they heard the president say, we are going to bring democracy to the Middle East. They would know how many times we brought democracy to other countries that we invaded. They would know if we brought democracy to Chile when we overthrew a democratically elected government in Chile in 1973. They would know how we brought democracy to Guatemala when we overthrew, a democratically elected. We love democratic elections. We love free elections, except when they go the wrong way. And then we send either our army in or the CIA in or our secret agents in to overthrow the government. If people knew that history, they would never for a moment believe President Bush when he says, oh, we're going into Iraq, you know, because of this reason and that reason and liberty and democracy and their threat. It takes some historical understanding to be skeptical of the things that authorities tell you. When you know history, you know that governments lie, as I.F. Stone said, governments lie all the time. Oh, not just the American government. It's just in the nature of governments. Well, they have to lie. I mean, governments in general do not represent the people of the societies that they govern. And since they don't represent the people, and since they act against the interests of the people, the only way they can hold power is if they lie to the people. If they told people the truth, they wouldn't last very long.
There's this great Popeye cartoon where he gets inside a Bluto shirt and he's popping out of his sleeve. Going, here I am, over here, you. And Bluto is confused. He's going,
hey, where'd you, why you,
And he's trying to beat up Popeye. And he ends up pummeling himself. And that is the war on terror. That is the war on terror. It's the war on terror. Joke where a guy is walking home late at night. He sees another guy under a street light, searching frantically in the gutter. He says, hey man, what did you lose? The guy says, I dropped my keys about 6 blocks away. Why aren't you looking over there? The guy says, the light's better over here. And that is the war on terror. That is the war on terror. Yeah, that's the war on terror. Is the war on terror. We got a vacuum cleaner on sale. Oh, I'm so sorry, but we're out of that model. But I can probably get you out the door for 200 billion more or less, probably more, with a model we call preemptive war that leaves your floor dirtier than before. There's that great quote about war, and I'm trying to remember who said it. That the people can always be brought to do the bidding of the leaders. You just tell them they're under attack and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism. Now who said that? Oh yeah, it was Hermann Göring.
That is the war on terror.
Yeah, that's the war on terror.
Eric Kleinenberg is the author of Fighting for Air, a study of how people are attempting to regain control of the media, and making some progress in doing so. Howard Zinn advocates learning American history to prevent yourself from being deceived by a lying president and lying media. Kleinenberg, though, says take back the media. Organize, join with comrades, and put the fear of God in your Congress biped. Here he is.
Unexpectedly, I started learning about this set of organizations at the national and also the local levels doing incredible work to try to challenge what I think are among the most powerful corporations on earth, these major media companies. They call themselves the media reform movement. What they're saying is, we have gotten ourselves into a bind in this country. We now have a media system. It's misled us into a war by giving us misinformation. It's misserved us at home by giving up on public interest programming. It's made our cultural life less interesting. Let's do something about it. And I would say that there are three big branches of this movement. On the one hand, there are people who started doing a lot of independent media production. Some are doing their own blogs or local websites. Others have set up radio stations. I write about the rise of amateur and pirate radio and low-power FM radio. Some do their own independent journalism. But indie media has become a force in this country, and they're kind of do-it-yourselfers in cities of all shapes and sizes, doing really interesting things. There's also people who are kind of watchdogs of the media. So the second branch is what I think of as media criticism. Groups like FAIR, but there are also right-wing organizations, Parents Television Council, that try to monitor the media offerings in their hometowns and see what are corporations doing. And the Parents Television Council is very interesting on this score. They got very upset because they realized there was a lot of stuff they thought of as indecent on the airwaves. And they did some research, and they discovered actually that the companies that were putting the most indecent material on the air were actually the biggest media chains out there, the clear channels that didn't actually care about the community standards in any respect. So while Clear Channel has avowedly right-wing politics and makes contributions to conservative candidates, the chains were actually putting all this kind of filthy content on the air. So the Parents Television Council was a watchdog that started to fight for local control. And so that's kind of the second part of it. The third part, which in a way is the most exciting for me, is the emergence of this media policy campaign. And there are campaigns on many different levels of people who've said, enough of this deregulation, enough of this fix on gutting the ownership laws and allowing fewer and fewer companies to own more and more of our media system. They started really in earnest in 2003. In 2003, Michael Powell was the chairman of the FCC. Powell is Colin Powell's son, and he is a kind of free market fundamentalist, and even a libertarian pundit, William Safire, said, Powell's a guy who never saw a merger he didn't like. And Powell decided he was just going to revolutionize the media ownership system, just allow the market to work, get rid of all these caps. And he tried to push through to the American people a set of laws that would have allowed unprecedented levels of consolidation. Well, it turns out that Americans had had enough. And so an organization called Free Press, which just was created, a few months before, started to organize all the different groups that had been working on these issues. And so on the left, groups like Move On and the ACLU and Now and Code Pink were working with, on the right, the Parents Television Council and the Christian Coalition and the National Rifle Association. And this is an unlikely coalition. It doesn't happen very often. And when it does, you should note, something is going on here. There must be something seriously wrong. They together got Americans or pushed Americans to send something like 3 million letters and emails to Congress and the FCC saying, enough with these proposals to allow radio stations to own even more, to allow cross-ownership so a newspaper can also own a local television station. Enough. Well, Powell ignored them. Powell literally ignored the 3 million letters. He said, this is 19th century politics. And he said, we have modern science, and the science tells us that the media system is not so bad. It's still competitive. It's still local. But then the FCC order got challenged by Congress, and then it got challenged in the courts. And there's an amazing story. A little pirate radio operation called Prometheus Radio Project, based in West Philadelphia, challenged the FCC in a lawsuit, the Prometheus Radio Project versus the FCC. And they said, your grounds for imposing these rule changes that would deregulate the media more are totally unsound. And then the court did a very serious evaluation, and they looked closely at this FCC science. Powell said, we've got science on our side. Well, what was that science? Well, in the FCC measure, officially, in New York City, the Dutchess Community College public access television station was more influential than the New York Times. That was the official FCC science that was guiding our media policy. Powell also assigned a couple of studies on local ownership in the media market. Does having a television station that's locally owned actually get you more local news? Well, the FCC economists who started researching into this discovered that, wow, actually, a locally owned and operated television station gets on average almost 5 minutes more local news per broadcast than a chain centrally owned place. That study got suppressed. It literally disappeared. It never hit the record, and no one even had heard about it until 2006. Barbara Boxer, pulled it out of her bag at the confirmation hearing of the new FCC chairman, Kevin Martin, and a whole scandal broke out. So the FCC science is really shoddy, and the court said so. And what happened is Powell's attempt to radically deregulate the market even further failed. So now we're at it again. You know, this year, 2007, we are going to be fighting the same battles. The FCC, now under Kevin Martin, a former Bush staffer, is trying to push through another series of deregulatory moves that would allow fewer companies to own more of the media market. This coalition, this media reform coalition, is starting to get to work again. Another big thing that's happening has to do with the future of the internet, and essentially the telephone and cable companies that control our access to the internet want to change the way the internet works so that they can basically sell faster sites to deep-pocketed clients. So Congress started to push through this bill last year in 2006. And in literally in 3 weeks, a new coalition called SaveTheInternet.com, which included Free Press and both those factions on the left and the right, got 1.5 million Americans to write letters to Congress in 3 weeks saying, do not change the way the internet works. There is no public benefit from getting rid of net neutrality. And amazingly enough, they blocked that bill from going through. So now, in 2007, with Democrats in control, there's a bill that would actually protect network neutrality, preserve equal access to all websites. But the telephone and the cable industry is fighting very hard. They're investing quite heavily in their lobbyists, as they always do. And so it's an enormous battle. And, you know, this is another, I think, really important message, that this is a grassroots movement that has had tremendous successes, you know, but its future depends on the growth of the coalition, that essentially the industries are so powerful, they're doubling down their investments. The communications industry has assigned an individual lobbyist to each member of Congress. You know, the grip they have on the agencies that are regulating them, on the legislators who are regulating them, is quite strong. And the way to beat it, the way to relax that grip, is for citizens, ordinary people, to get involved in this movement and say, you know, we've had enough and we're watching. And if you, as an FCC member, or if you as a congressional official, especially here in our hometown, you know, decide to support more deregulation, you're going to pay a price for it, because you're basically ignoring the democratic wish of the American people.
Thank you, Eric Kleinenberg. I love that image he suggests of people from Code Pink and people from the NRA sitting down at a table and plotting strategies to advance their common interests. And indeed, they do have plenty of common interests. And what does each group know about the other? Mainly what they read or see in the corporate-controlled media. So you can imagine how accurate that picture is on both sides. Well, with that, I thank you for listening. The excerpts from the Howard Zinn speech are courtesy of democracynow.org. Our selections from a long interview with Eric Kleinenberg comes from producer Mike McCormick of Mind Over Matters. New World Notes is produced in the spacious underground studios of WWUHFM, a community service of the University of Hartford. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the presenter, station management, or the licensee, and their expression is protected by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Your comments and suggestions are most welcome. Email me at kdowst, that's KDOWST, at hotmail.com. Until next time, here's wishing you a good week, illegitimi non carborundum, and keep the faith.